discretion is advised.
Live from Glasgow, Scotland, it's time for the revolution in professional wrestling radio as Robert and Kenny prepare to take you inside the ropes.
Welcome to a new episode of Inside the Ropes. My name is Kenny McIntosh, and I know you've been checking your iTunes feed and your Podomatic feed all week. You checked it on Monday, there was nothing there. You checked it on Thursday, there was nothing there. And it's Sunday, but finally there's something here, and I would love to tell you that Robert Duffin is on the line with me, but sadly Robert Duffin, every 4 or 5 weeks, likes to cash in his I Need a Podcast Off card, so he has cashed that in.
And you're stuck with me.
And we have Sinondra Reinstein Russellback condom. We have Sandra. We have Sandra on the show with her inexplicable name. So it's been a weird kind of week because we've not had any shows. But tell the lovely people of Inside the Ropes Land what you've been up to in the last week, because you've been off gallivanting about America.
I have been gallivanting about America. About a week and a half ago, I left for Metropolis, Illinois, and we did a show from Metropolis. Wow, I've been gone a long time. I just got back today. So I did the Superman celebration thing, and that was a blast. It's always a blast. I know a lot of really cool people down there, and we're all huge geeks. So
the 38th annual.
The 38th annual Superman celebration. That is very, very correct, Kenny McIntosh. Mm-hmm. And then I went with my family, actually, had a vacation in Branson, Missouri, so I was hanging out with my family at a vacation resort place for a week, and that was also very enjoyable. Got to hang out by the pool and go swimming and see a show, and then on my way home yesterday, I actually met up with Inside the Ropes' own contributor, David J. McCutcheon, for some food, and then he took us out for ice cream. He took Mr. Sonder and me out for ice cream. We had a lovely time. And it was much appreciated, and we got to see his lovely city of St. Louis.
Which means that, like, what's the kid? So I've met. So I've
You've met Robert.
I've met Robert. Robert's met me and David. You've met David.
Yes. So basically, and I will be meeting you.
You will be meeting me. You will. You'll be meeting Robert and I for the Paul Heyman tour coming up next month, which you can still get tickets for at insidetheropes.co.uk. If you're in Glasgow, there are a limited amount of general admission tickets left, but you need to get them directly from the ABC in Glasgow or on Ticketweb. Manchester general admission, you need to get that directly through the Comedy Store. All other tickets, which there are very limited quantities of, get them at insidetheropes.co.uk. But
smooth transition there, by the way.
Thanks, mate. So my week was interesting as well. I got a stomach bug, which was lovely, which I'm only bringing this up because I feel like it's just something that could interest certain people. I'm a hypochondriac in real life. Like, I really am. Like, I'm not exaggerating. And when I had that stomach ulcer about 5-6 weeks ago, I took it really badly. Like, I was on the phone to my mum crying because I thought I had stomach cancer. Like, I was really thinking that it was bad. Because, like, when you vomit up blood and you never have before, it's a shock to the system. It's a real shock that, you know, you don't think about things like that happening to you. And obviously that took about a month to go away, and I went and got checked, and the stomach ulcer is gone, which is amazing. So then to get a bug, I didn't know it was a bug, and I was thinking the worst. I was thinking something's happened again. But luckily it was just a stomach bug, but I was kind of out of commission for 2 days, and I was supposed to be in Newcastle this week with What Culture, because I was going to be down there doing some stuff in their offices for a couple of days, and then going to do the WCPW shows, the What Culture Pro Wrestling tapings. But obviously I was ill, so finally on Wednesday I sort of manned up and just drugged myself up and got on a train and got to the building about an hour before the tapings started on Wednesday night and got to be a part of those shows. And I know a lot of people some people that are listening to this might be kind of like, what culture doing a wrestling show? Which, trust me, I was one of those people to think exactly that.
I think you might have been one of those people on the show last time.
I think it's absolutely valid to have thought that because, you know, for them to go from making lists and videos of like how we would book Raw to doing a promotion is very weird. But genuinely, the person that is booking the shows and putting it together did a really good job. The shows were really fun. They utilized a lot of British wrestlers better than they are utilized in other promotions. And I think people are going to really enjoy the shows when they go on YouTube. So I hope that you will check them out. And they've got more tapings coming up at the end of July. So we'll see how that goes. But we've got Money in the Bank coming up tonight. So we are going to talk about Slammiversary tomorrow when Robert's back. So we will talk about Brother Nero, although to be honest, I don't think it really paid off as excitedly as we'd hoped it would at Slammiversary.
Did you see Matt Hardy's like follow-up Facebook video where he just stared and like yelled out a window or something for 5 minutes? It's like 5 minutes of him making faces. He's so weird.
I love Matt Hardy. He's so ridiculous. Now, did you
get the best?
I did put this in a news article on a video I did for What Culture on Friday, the Fast Count, but Jeff Hardy had done an interview for Sports Illustrated last week, and it was to promote Slammiversary. And in one of they asked him something about like going back to WWE and stuff, and he said that he wanted to finish his career in WWE at WrestleMania. And I just, like, I can't help but feel bad for TNA in the sense of like, you know, I mean, I do think they're a dead brand and there's not really much you can do to save it. But at the same time, if they're paying your wage, shut up.
And if you're in a main event program for a promotion and going, oh, I'd like to be somewhere else, it's not a good look.
No, I just, because I feel bad, because like the Dudley Boys, I'm sure they said it when they were at TNA.
Yeah.
Kurt Angle would say it like every interview chance he got. So I just feel bad because like, if you don't want to be there, go somewhere else, but don't work for them, take their money and then just say, oh, I wish I was in WWE. But Jeff Hardy did say he wants to top what Shane McMahon did at WrestleMania 32. So whatever that means.
Whatever that means. Jump off something higher than Hell in a Cell. Break yourself completely. I don't know.
Yeah, I can only imagine. But something that kind of, it doesn't relate a lot, but it maybe relates a little bit to you being at Metropolis, is one of the guests that they have every single year at Metropolis is Jerry the King Lawler.
Yeah, for the past few years, I saw him on Saturday.
And he's been in the news, and so here's what happened. So I woke up on Friday morning. Well, actually, the truth is, I recorded the Fast Count thing with What Culture on Friday, like 11 a.m., half 11, and I recorded it, and there was a thing that Jerry Lawler had said to a fan at Metropolis about how there might be two pay-per-views each month when the brand split happens.
Right.
Which we'll talk about in a minute. But then when that had finished, a news story had come out that him and his girlfriend had both been arrested. She claimed that he had tried to hit her and put her up against a wall. He claimed that she came home drunk and she was trying to go and drive while she was drunk, and she'd hit him with a candlestick or something. And he did apparently have marks on him. And they were both arrested because the police officers couldn't tell who was telling the truth. Now, Lawler obviously has never drank publicly. He's famous for having never drank. So I don't know who's in the right or who's in the wrong or what happened. But what really made me sad about it was it sucks as a situation. And WWE suspended him as they had to do. But it just really annoys me that everybody's just now just clamoring to say that Jerry Lawler is a wife beater. Like, without even having facts about it, without knowing what happened, it's just, that's the immediate thought as well, he must be a wife beater. Like, is there a point of even people, like, you know, trying to be proven innocent or proven guilty, does it even matter anymore? Like, when you read this as an example, or when you heard about it, I'm just curious, what was your immediate reaction once you'd read what had happened?
My immediate reaction was, they are both terrible people and should probably not be near each other at this point in time.
Which is a fair assessment. Now, the thing about Jerry Lawler is he was... I think he was charged. I'm sure he was charged in 1993
yes.
for raping an underage girl. But he was found innocent in that case. So, like, the way that I look at that personally is I approach that as, if he's been found innocent, then I'm going to have to go with that he is innocent, but I would approach it with caution. That's how I would look at it. But some people just seem to say, well, he was charged with that in 1993, so he must have hit this woman in 2016. But, I guess, I don't really know what I'm trying to say, but like...
I don't know. I think it's a dangerous conversation because it gets into, like, there's a lot of culture of victim blaming going on right now, like with the Stanford rape case and mm-hmm. that kind of stuff. Like, it's tricky. It's real tricky.
Do you think at this point, at this very specific juncture, from what we know, that because to me, from what's happened, you know, she's not claiming that she's claiming that he pushed her against the wall. He's claiming that she hit her with a candlestick or whatever. It doesn't seem
like kicked him in the groin and stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, but it doesn't seem like there's really ever going to be any resolve or any sort of further information that tells you who did what or who was right or who was lying or who wasn't or whatever.
No, and so, I don't think it's really for us to know.
But what do you think that means for Jerry Lawler, like the sort of legacy of him as a wrestling character, as, you know, legendary Jerry the King Lawler? Does this really tarnish it? Or, and I guess the other thing is, not to be super pessimistic about it, but it feels like this is maybe the way that WWE will choose to sort of edge him out, because they were probably going to do it in the next couple of years anyway. But I guess I just feel bad for him in the sense that, you know, it's like the Adam Rose thing. I'm not going to... I don't in any way condone domestic violence, but I also don't think that we should just throw pitchforks at people for an incident that happens between two people, because we don't know what happened. But it would be a shame to let one incident between two people define somebody's entire career, if that makes sense.
Well, that's my thing, too. Like, I feel like domestic violence is a very serious issue, and mm-hmm. it needs to be taken seriously. And I really appreciate that WWE has the zero tolerance policy that they have in these situations.
They
absolutely should. And I think it's more than fair that, you know, you're suspended indefinitely until something comes out, until it doesn't. You know, they didn't fire Adam Rose. That was, you know, he asked for his release and it was a mutual situation. They didn't just fire him right away when allegations came out. So I think the company is doing what it has to do. In terms of Jerry Lawler's legacy, I mean, Jerry Lawler, it's hard for me because I really don't like him very much at all. His attitudes toward women are abhorrent.
Okay.
And everything about his character and everything about, like, he's always been nice enough to me in person. I'll say that. Like, he's never treated me badly or anything, but I just, his attitudes toward women in, you know, even in interviews and stuff, I don't get that that's all character. It's not. Like, he has a history with women that just isn't great, in my opinion. And so it's difficult for me to be like, oh, I love the guy so much. I really don't. I never have. So I guess in this instance, like, for me, his legacy has always just been kind of a misogynist prick anyway. So that doesn't help. So I'm really just not the best one to ask, I guess. But I think it does bring to light the conversations that we've had on the show before about public shaming and everyone throwing pitchforks and whatnot at, you know, both sides of the situation. And I guess I just wish that people didn't take such absolutist stances on these sorts of things before they know what happened. Like, do I think he's a great person? No, I sure don't. Do I think that I have the absolute moral authority to tell what should happen or shouldn't happen in this situation. No, no, I don't. I really hope he doesn't release his shirt with his mugshot on it, because that's super tacky, Adam Rose. like that, the Adam Rose situation with the mugshot, and then these conversations kind of go together, I feel, right? Like,
they're kind of a similar situation. He has a pro wrestling tee store, and he released a t-shirt with his mugshot on it. Was that what it was?
Yep, that's what it was. Didn't have any text, didn't have, like, I mean, it just had the booking stamp on it. And that, to me, was just incredibly tacky and incredibly sad, because I saw his defense of it. And he basically said it's about overcoming a bad situation or something and turning a lemon into lemonade or something. No, like, that's you making money off of the fact that you got arrested for domestic violence. And that's you profiting off the fact that you made money, or that's you profiting off the fact that you had a domestic violence situation. And I know he said that it was his wife's idea to release the shirt. I just can't really support that kind of thing. Like, making a light of a domestic violence situation, whether anyone, because he said that no crime was committed, no one was hurt, and that's, you know, charges were dropped against him, and that's good. But it's just, domestic violence is not a situation that should be made light of. And I feel like that's making light of domestic violence as a situation. And I really just kind of found it abhorrent that he would do that. The shirt has been pulled from Pro Wrestling Tees.
From what I read of it, and I'm not the person to give an absolute opinion on it, but I can understand to an extent where him and his wife were coming from, in the sense that if they themselves feel that they're very happy and that nothing's wrong and that they're in love and whatever, that the t-shirt to them is okay. But I think that once you put it out there in a public arena, it becomes, like what you're saying, a lot of people are going to have an issue with it, you know, because it's not something to make light of, and it's difficult. The thing with Jerry Lawler is, I mean, I do like Jerry Lawler, but that's not really got anything to do with it. I've always liked his character. I liked it for a long, long time, and then his character became quite dull. But, you know, he was always one of my favourite commentators, and I enjoyed his character, but I just feel for the guy that most of the social media that I've read, or that came up when it came out, was people just sort of saying, well, this just confirms everything else that I know about him. It's like, well, you don't know anything about him. Right. You don't know the guy. You know the character on television. And it's this thing of, like, I don't know anything about John Cena the person. I know stuff about John Cena the character. I can't tell you if John Cena is a good person. Well, I mean, I probably can, because he does, like, 1,000 make-a-wishes, so he is a good person. But, like, nobody has the right to just all of a sudden just have this moral fucking high ground where they can say, well, Jerry Lawler, he played a misogynistic character on wrestling. Therefore, he must have hit the woman. Therefore, and it's just this whole...
Yeah, nobody has the right to make that call.
But that's the culture that we're in, is of people making those calls on a regular basis, and it irks me. I just think it's a really sad situation. I read it, I saw it, and it just kind of made me sad. No matter what happened, no matter who did what to who, you know, so it's just a shame, because Jerry Lawler's in the sort of last part of his career, and I just hope for his sake that, first of all, him and his girlfriend, and, you know, people go, oh, well, the age difference, who cares? She's 26 years old. She's old enough to decide what relationship she wants to be in and with who she wants to be with. If she wants to be with a 66-year-old guy, that's her call, not mine. So I'm not going to just, you know, throw her under the bus for it. But, I hope that they are able to sort it out or go their separate ways, whatever it is that they do. And then I hope after that, that he's able to sort of pick up the pieces and salvage something positive from it, if he can. Because it would be a shame that this was the last memory of Jerry Lawler, you know, instead of all the contributions he had to wrestling, just this one incident.
Right.
Because that to me would be a shame. But, so that's that. I thought it was a quite good discussion, actually, which went quite long. But what else has been in the news? So, with the brand split coming up on July 19th, there is a lot of talk about WWE, well, the Wrestling Observer, and Dave Meltzer have noted that WWE are contacting a lot of wrestlers in their 40s about coming back for the brand split, and because I guess they need to beef up the rosters, and even though they bring up people from NXT, there's still quite a, there's still more depth that needs to be added. So, what, because it's funny, I thought of you when I knew we were recording this, because you've always had, I don't want to say a problem, but like, you know, NXT's always been your main sort of wrestling that you enjoyed, and it's always been the sort of, you know, you've always kind of seemed to like the new stuff and the new wrestlers and the up-and-comers and the developing characters and all that sort of stuff. Whereas what this is actually talking about is the complete opposite from what you enjoy, which is bringing back established people from the past to integrate with the current. On the surface, before we go into actual names and go through some people, what do you think of this as an idea for the two brands to sort of beef up the rosters?
I think it makes sense because they're going to need people to beef up the rosters. They're going to need people to fill spots now that they're splitting the rosters in two. And I would say my attitudes toward it are changing somewhat because I think I used to lean more toward, no, you need to focus on the new people that you have. You need to like treat my NXT kids with respect and treat them well and make them into big stars. And I still feel that way, absolutely. But I do also see the value in bringing back people with experience to help teach people who are newer, first of all. And also, like, they've been around the block in WWE. They know how it works. They know the road schedule. They know all of that kind of stuff. And I think Baby Rhino was the first one that, you know, it was an established guy coming back to work in NXT, actually. Has there been talk, are they bringing these people back specifically for Raw and SmackDown, or are any of them being called to work in NXT?
I think it's more for Raw and SmackDown.
Okay. But, I mean, someone like Chris Jericho, when he comes back, and he's back right now, and he's killing it, right? Like, he's in his 40s, he's mid-40s, I think, and he's absolutely still great on the roster and doing amazing stuff. So I don't think you can discount someone just because they're older and they've been there before as having no value or only having value to, you know, just put guys over and be jobbers or whatever to the new guys. Like, I feel like the people with experience do still have a lot of value to the company, I guess, is where I'm seeing it now.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that Rhino was an interesting one because Rhino to me always seemed like someone who was there to put younger guys over. That was the role, which is fine. I don't think they should all come back to just do that. I think there's some people that should come back and should be reestablished and should be featured with the younger guys. But what was interesting to me was like in the mid 90s, Vince McMahon used to not want to use anybody when they reached 40. Like, that was his thing. Like if long-time fans and stuff will remember that, like, you know, he wouldn't let Randy Savage wrestle. He put him in commentary.
How old was Randy Savage when that happened? I was just thinking about this the other day.
He was about 39 when it happened.
So, like, John Cena's age.
Yeah, he was, like, John Cena's age, and he was, because what happened was, originally, in 91, they did the storyline, which you've probably heard Robert and I talk about a million times, the WrestleMania 7 match, where he retires. And the original real life reason for that was because he wanted to have kids with Elizabeth, and he was going to come off steroids, so he was going to become small. So he was going to go and just become a dad. That was like his plan. And then him and Elizabeth's relationship wasn't really going that well, so he was going to come back. But during the time that he was off, he became a commentator on like Superstars, and then he came back in 92 and he had like a run for like a year, and then he basically, when they started up Monday Night Raw at the beginning of 93, he became the commentator on that. And they just, you know, he would be used in matches sparingly, but like he wasn't really used that often. And that was why he left in 94 and he went to WCW. But the thing with WCW was, and obviously the guys I'm talking about are much bigger stars than probably some of the people they're thinking about bringing back. But, you know, guys like Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage and Roddy Piper and Ric Flair and all that, in their 40s, were much bigger draws and people who could get people into the arena and do good stuff and had character, established characters and stuff that had a lot of value that Vince McMahon wasn't willing to use. So I think that there are a few people that he could bring back that would be of value. So should we maybe go through some of the rumored names slash... Yeah, I mean, they're all rumored names at the moment. There's nothing confirmed. But should we go through some rumored names and see what we think?
Sure.
Now, this one, Dave Meltzer mentioned that this is somebody who has definitely been contacted, according to him, which baffles me, to be honest. I just did not think this person would be somebody that I would ever see again in WWE. Stevie Richards.
I don't know that much about Stevie Richards. He was in Right to Censor, though, yeah?
He was, yeah, and he was in the Blue World Order with the Blue Meanie and stuff.
I basically know him from Right to Censor, and Right to Censor is one of my favorite things, and that's where my opinion ends, because I just don't know.
Yeah.
Except for he does DDP yoga, too. Isn't he, like, certified with that?
He is, yes. He's in very good shape. I just don't know if Stevie Richards in 2016 has anything name value wise to offer, unless they decided to try and bring back the Blue World Order. But then, I mean, that's just kind of.
I think
an ECW Nostalgia Act like in 2016 just does not seem like a good idea.
But that brings up an interesting point for me, because does that mean that they're bringing these people back for nostalgia type runs, or are they bringing them back for potentially a new gimmick or something new to do? Because what I think works about when Chris Jericho comes back, except for when he's trying to be cool dad with scarves and be a babyface, but, you know, awesome, stupid idiot Chris Jericho right now, right? He comes back, but he doesn't do the same old thing. He comes back and he inserts himself into a program as though he's one of the guys wrestling on a show. And I think it'll be interesting to see whether they call these people back and expect them to do exactly what they did back in the whenever they were around before, or whether they insert them as members of a roster. Because my positivity toward it is thinking of it as inserting guys as part of a roster to be, you know, integrated into feuds and into storylines and work with guys both old and new, and going forward from there to, you know, develop two complete brands. What I don't want to see from this is, even though Right to Censor is my favorite thing, I don't want to see him be that. I don't want to see the Blue World Order. I don't care about the Blue World Order. I don't really even understand what it is.
You do know what the Blue World Order was, basically Paul
the
Heyman.
New World Order, but blue? Like, that's all I know, seriously.
Yes, yeah, so he basically took three guys in ECW and just made a parody of the NWO, and it got really
Would
over.
Not have been able to tell you that it was an ECW thing.
Well, you will find out in July at the Paul Heyman tour when he talks
I
about it.
I will.
The so get researching. Yeah, no, do you know, that's, you bring up a really good point, actually, because as much as I've just said, you know, Stevie Richards, I don't really see what you would do with him. He did do a sort of Dr. Stevie thing in TNA, which a lot of people raved about. So maybe he's one of those kind of new gimmick people that they could do something with. That's pretty interesting. Carlito is somebody that's came up. And he came up about a year ago, but then maybe bring him back. And I saw him wrestle not too long ago, and he's still in very good shape. Looks young. I can't say that Carlito as a sort of lower card veteran guy would be a bad option.
I think Carlito makes a lot of sense. I mean, I liked Carlito on NXT when he was a pro before he got fired and disappeared.
See, now, ladies and gentlemen, if you did not think that Sandra was good at being the NXT Woman of Knowledge, I couldn't even remember that Carlito was on NXT.
And immediately,
she was able to take Carlito and put him back to NXT for a second. That is textbook. Well done.
That is, isn't it? Well, that's how I know Carlito. So, but I mean, I think he would have value as a lower card guy. I mean, if Carlito comes back, they're going to put him with the Shining Stars, right? Like,
well, maybe that's the saving grace of the Shining Stars. Like,
I think it could be.
What I would love to see, actually, just like fantasy booking at my nut here, is like have the Shining Stars doing one of those terrible green screen interviews, and just have Carlito walk in and be like, "What the fuck are you doing?"
Yeah.
And because you won't know this, but there's a character, and you remember, you know, the Headbangers. You've seen them about and stuff.
I've heard of them.
Okay, so one of the Headbangers, the Headbangers broke up in like 1999 or 1998, And one of them developed this gimmick called Beaver Cleavage.
Which
was basically like vignettes of like a 1950s household with this headbanger dressed as like a schoolboy with like a really hot mum who he was clearly fucking. And
what?
Yeah, so they did these vignettes, right, for like, and then he came out, I'm sure he had a match or something, or he was about to have a match, anyway. But they did this thing where, after a couple of weeks, midway through a promo as Beaver Cleavage, he just went, oh fuck this, I'm not doing this anymore, and just broke character. And was like, I'm not, it obviously was within the framework of the story, but like, he was throwing away the character within the story. So, that's the similarity that I have in my head when I think of the Shining Stars doing that. I just wanted to say.
See, I would, that would be kind of great, actually. Like, I feel like if you can use Carlito as a catalyst to get the Shining Stars out of the green screen room and into anything else that doesn't involve being matadors again. Poor Shining Stars. I just want to hug them and say, you're good wrestlers, but sweethearts, this isn't working. Yeah.
No, you're right. I'm just laughing because you're absolutely right. It's not working.
I think they are talented and I think they are good and I think that they could be something and I really feel like they try and I want something that they try to work for them because they seem like lovely fellows. And if Carlito can come back and maybe give them some guidance, who knows? Maybe they all get apples. I don't know. But God. Something would be good, and I think that it could be valuable. I don't, you know, I mean, a lot of the names here, it doesn't seem like they're going to come back and be the sort of nostalgia act like when they bring back people for WrestleMania, right? Like, these are going to be people that are working on the roster and that are, you know, embedding themselves in it and not, like, coming in to save the day. They're coming in to be a part of the roster, and I think that's what I appreciate.
Yeah, I think some of these guys... You know, I would be okay with some of these guys coming in and working not necessarily a full schedule.
Yeah.
Do the TV and one or two house shows a week rather than, like, four nights a week or whatever. Because, you know, when you're in your mid-40s, you might not want to do that. It's a long grind. But, obviously, people will understand that I'm slowly but surely getting the names a little bit bigger here. Because I thought that was the best way to do it. Somebody who I've not seen in a list, but I just assumed that this guy would be on a list of people who they would call to bring back. And I think it's an interesting guy to bring up because I don't think that you have the familiarity or the soft spot for him that a lot of people do. Rob Van Dam is someone that I assume. Now, your only experience of Rob Van Dam, as far as I'm aware, is his 2013 return?
Yes.
Where he came back, he was in Money in the Bank, and then he had the feud with Alberto Del Rio over who can get the lesbian manager. And
oh, yeah. Yeah, because Ricardo started airbrushing his t-shirts.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's obviously your experience of RVD, but RVD, like, back in ECW and even in WWE, like, he is a very good wrestler, and if utilized correctly, like, he could... Really
is still a very good wrestler or was a very good wrestler and does the same things at a quarter speed now?
I think he still is a good wrestler, but I just don't think he's had any reason to be motivated. Like, I thought he had some decent matches in his run when he came back. Like, I remember he had a very good match with Jericho on Raw, like, when he immediately came back in 2013. But, I think that he would be a good guy to have in one of the rosters if they can figure out something to do with him. But is RVD just one of these people that you kind of are not that interested in seeing?
I'm just not that interested in seeing him. But, I mean, if he proves me wrong, I mean, that'd be great. Mm-hmm. But right now, yeah. I don't like his roly-poly bullshit move. So
his roly-poly.
That seems to be all that he does.
MVP is someone who has been talked about.
I like MVP a lot. I would love to see MVP back.
I like him. I think he's a solid upper mid-cardy sort of guy on one of the rosters. Like, he's he never really got as much of a chance like he deserved. I think he's a good wrestler. He's a good character. He's charismatic. And
I think MVP in today's WWE could be a lot more successful than MVP in 2010 or whatever WWE.
Yeah, he probably could. Now the last,
and he's great at talking, so. I mean, the programs could be excellent.
Which is lovely. The last four that I'm going to bring up are people who were kind of, well, a couple of them were rumored, and Forbes.com have reported that these four names have been contacted. I don't necessarily believe it, because it's not from a reputable source, but I think these are all names who... I think there's three of them who could end up on the roster, and there's one that's just not going to end up on the roster. So we'll go with the one that I don't think is going to end up on the roster at all. Goldberg is someone who was brought up. Now, I think if Goldberg was going to come back for anything, it really would be a one-match kind of deal. So I just don't think that's really something to bring up. Because the thing with Goldberg is somebody who would want a lot of money to come back on a sort of semi-full-time schedule. And I just think that... I mean, he's like 50 now. I just don't see him wanting to do a year's full schedule.
And have they not offered him WrestleMania stuff that he's turned down multiple times?
I don't think they've ever got as far as getting to an offer point, but they've opened negotiations with him before, and I think it's just that he sees himself financially somewhere where they do not see him. I think that's what it comes down to. He thinks that he is the manager of a retail store, and they think he is a shift supervisor in McDonald's.
Sure.
If that makes sense. Jeff Hardy, funnily enough, someone is on the list, which is funny because he wants to come back. So he is, I don't know when his contract runs out. I assume it's probably later on this year or the end of the year. I think Jeff Hardy is probably the one name that they could get realistically that could have the biggest impact and have the best run with the company.
Yeah, I mean, I would agree with that. It's not, I'm just not that into Jeff Hardy, I guess. So it's not something that excites me like crazy. Like, because Jeff Hardy would be someone that would come back and be like, I am a Hardy, I am going to do my Jeff Hardy thing, instead of being one of the lower card guys who could maybe do something else, then I just kind of get those alarm bells that are still in the back of my brain that go, I don't want to have to see Jeff Hardy versus one of the Dudleys again.
Yeah, well, I think that there are good options. I mean, for a guy like Jeff Hardy, who if he came back, I immediately think, wow, I would love to see Jeff Hardy and John Cena. I would love to see Jeff Hardy and Bray Wyatt. I would love to see Jeff Hardy and Finn Balor, or Samoa Joe, or AJ, like, there's so many matches.
See, and that's the kind of thing that I think could be really good, and I think Jeff Hardy could absolutely have value to the company.
Yeah, I think that's where they would absolutely go with it. I can't imagine that they would bring him back and put him in the nostalgia Dudley spot. I think they should bring back Jeff on his own. Do not try and do the Hardy Boys again, because they are not Hardy Boys anymore. They are Hardy Men.
And one of them is broken. And the best.
right, we've got two names left. I think this is very likely to happen. What do you think of a return for Rey Mysterio?
I think it could work if done properly. I think they would be in danger of falling back on, he is Rey Mysterio, he will be Rey Mysterio in a tag match. Like what Rey Mysterio was doing at the end of his WWE career, right?
Oh God, that was grim.
It wasn't great. And it's the kind of thing that they seem to feel about luchadors with masks, is they wear a mask, and that is what you do with them, is they wear a mask. It's, you know, it's your problem with Kalisto. It's the problem that Sin Cara faced. It's the problem that they just don't really necessarily know what to do with them, because Rey Mysterio, as a legend, has absolute value, but Rey Mysterio getting involved in a feud, I don't want to see him fight Del Rio again.
Oh God, no.
Ever
no.
In my life.
I think if you ever see like Rey Mysterio and Del Rio like in the back edging towards each other, people should be like, run for cover. Yeah, don't have that.
But I guess that's my fear with WWE and Rey Mysterio, is that we would get that again. And I mean, Rey Mysterio, seeing what he's doing in Lucha Underground, he can go. Like, he's not 1996 Rey Mysterio or whatever, but he can go. He can have value. So it's just those legend warning bells going off in my head that I'm like, just do it right. Please just do it right. I don't want... Yeah. Instead of Cool Dad Chris Jericho, we want awesome Chris Jericho type runs for these guys if they come back. Like, if they can embed themselves into something and make it great, awesome. Like, I think he absolutely has value. After the whole way everything went down in WWE before, it seemed like that might not be something we saw when Rey Mysterio finally, when he was doing Free Rey and everything and trying to get free from the company. But I think in interviews he has said that he'd be open to a return, you know, if the money's right and whatnot. So I, you know, if they do it right, I think maybe that's just, maybe that's my resounding theme of this whole thing is if they can do it right and if they can use them properly and if they can make it into a good story and if they can tell good stories and do good matches, then I'm all for it. Just don't fall back on he is a legendary name and also wears a mask.
This is true. Well, I actually think that Rey Mysterio is probably the one guy that could help with my eternal problem, which is lack of caring or desire to watch or use airspace to talk about Kalisto. And I think that Rey Mysterio, you know, I would love to see, there's a really famous wrestling storyline from the like late 70s or early 80s with Bruno Sammartino and Larry Zbysko. And the storyline was like Bruno Sammartino was the world champion and Larry Zbysko was like, please mentor me to make me the best sort of thing. And mm-hmm. he did this whole thing and you know, Sammartino would coach him and Zbysko would win matches and it was all great. And eventually the student turned on the teacher and just destroyed him. And they had this big program.
So I that could like be it. Excellent.
Yeah, I like the idea of like Kalisto, like that's, you know, he loses it and he turns on Mysterio and it ultimately, you know, if they said, right, okay, here's Rey Mysterio, we're bringing him back. We're bringing him in for 3 years, and at the end of those 3 years, the aim of his contract is that at the end of those 3 years, Kalisto is the new Rey Mysterio. That's what we're using him for. Fine. Just do it right. Give Kalisto a personality and use Rey Mysterio to do that. You could.
I'd be all for it. And I mean, we've seen Rey Mysterio come back and, you know, he's doing kind of a mentor student thing with Dragon Azteca Jr. right now in Lucha Underground, and it's great. So if they can do that, I mean, they shouldn't just copy Lucha Underground storylines, not that they haven't before, but if it can be that kind of a thing, like you were saying, Bruno Sammartino, Larry Zbysko, I would be all about it. And yes,
I would be into it. The last name on the list is someone who I know a lot of people want to see back in WWE. I would love to see this guy back, and I sort of like don't allow myself the excitement. Right, like, the idea of this guy coming back is how I feel about Roman Reigns turning heel. I would love it so, so much, but I don't allow myself to ever get excited about it. and it's Kurt Angle.
Ah.
And the everybody talks about Kurt Angle coming back and essentially having, like, being the mentor slash leader of American Alpha.
Yeah.
I think that would be just beyond, I mean, I think I would potentially cry with happiness because it would just be so lovely. And, you know, that would be a way to have Angle be around, and he doesn't need to wrestle all the time, but you can have him in six-man matches on pay-per-view sometimes, and, you know, ultimately I guess he would do a WrestleMania match, but I would love to see him with Jordan and Gable.
I think it'd be great. I think it'd absolutely be great. I mean, my thing with Kurt Angle, and this is somewhat with Rey Mysterio with all of his injuries too, but Kurt Angle especially, I just worry about Kurt Angle because I feel like he's going to wrestle longer than he should. I feel like with Kurt Angle, he'll have to pass the WWE physical and, mm-hmm. you know, I don't know the man, so I don't know his internal condition as well as he does, but that's a thing to consider, right? Because Kurt Angle has been in rough shape before with wrestling and I don't know what kind of shape he's in right now. But I worry about him just from a humanity standpoint. Like, don't put yourself through something that you don't have to. And I think that if he were to come back and do a very limited schedule, very limited run, and do something like Mentor American Alpha, I think that could be the perfect use for Kurt Angle because it would give him a big moment that maybe isn't him being in a huge singles match at the main event of WrestleMania or something. But it could give him something to go out on that would be really, really cool. And, I mean, he's expressed interest in working with them, hasn't he?
Oh, yeah, like forever.
Like forever. So, I mean, it's not like that's something that's being forced upon him that he would be like, no, I need to be this star in the spotlight and da-da-da-da. Like, it sounds like something that he would love to do, too. And, I mean, Jordan and Gable obviously look up to Kurt Angle. How can you not?
And I think you could even put him in there as a non-wrestler. He could be their coach.
Yeah. You know, absolutely. Like,
I don't know why, but like in my head, the idea of Kurt Angle in a tracksuit with a whistle or something with his gold medal and Chad Gable just makes me smile so much.
I mean, Kurt Angle with a Ready, Willing, Gable towel. Like, it just, it seems like the most perfect image to me. It just seems so awesome. And it's absolutely something I would love to see. And I mean, when they busted out those tandem ankle locks at TakeOver, did we not all think? I mean, that was the entire point of that was... Yeah, we're and somewhere Jack Swagger wept.
Yeah, so that's kind of the list of people. I guess we'll see what happens. I, for the most part, think it's a good group of people who could all make a difference.
Have they talked to Shelton Benjamin?
I've not heard his name, but I wouldn't be surprised if he was on the list.
So I think Mr. Saunders just mentioned something. I don't know if he read that they had talked to him or if that was just wishful thinking on his part, but...
I also think that somebody who'd be quite good is actually Mr. Anderson / Mr. Kennedy.
Yeah.
I liked him. I thought he was he was more capable than he than the stuff that he did. But he was kind of plagued by injuries, so I guess we'll see if he seems to do it. So before we ride off into the podcast sunset tonight, we're going to talk about Money in the Bank 2016. So we will be back right after this where we will play you the theme tune for Money in the Bank / Donald Trump's theme tune and we will predict the pay-per-view.
Donald Trump.
Money! Money, 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 money!
Back and we are mere hours away from Money in the Bank. Money, 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 money. So let's go through the matches. I really apologize for that. I don't know why I felt the need, but it's so catchy.
It's really catchy.
It's really impossible to not listen to that song.
You know, it's I have trouble differentiating between that and Shane McMahon's theme.
Really? Oh God.
Yes. They sound the same, and they're about money.
What you've just said there would be like me saying to you, I have trouble differentiating NXT, the game show, seasons 1 and 2.
No.
That's how ridiculous what you just said is.
I am just saying that in clips, and this hasn't been as much of a problem since Shane McMahon has come back, because now I hear his song more often, but consider... I'm also the girl who can't tell anyone on Game of Thrones apart. They all look the same to me. Wow. So I'm maybe not the best judge, but.
Okay, so Money in the Bank 2016 takes place tonight. It is a WrestleMania-worthy card if you will listen to WWE. I don't know if I would give it that much, but it is a pretty strong card. So let's go through it. The kickoff show.
Maybe it depends which WrestleMania.
That's very true. If it's 29 or 27, then I would agree. Yeah. Okay, the kickoff show now has two matches on it. So let's go through. And I think you're actually going to probably like both of them, to be fair.
And a different two matches to what it was last week.
Exactly. I'm kind of glad, though, because the two matches that are now in the main show really are matches that should be on the main show, given the storyline. So the Dudley Boys are going to take on the Lucha Dragons in the kickoff show. Now, I don't know if you've seen this, but... On This Week in WWE, they made a boo-boo. Did you see this?
No.
So you know originally they were advertising there'd be 7 guys in the match?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
There was, because they put the graphic out with the 7th guy in it.
Did they?
Uh-huh.
Who was it?
And it was Kalisto.
Really?
I think they made the right call. I'm not just saying that because I don't like him. But like, I just don't think he... I think if you put him in there, it's very obvious that you're putting him there as like a spot monkey. And I think it just sends the wrong message.
Well, I think that's part of what Money in the Bank has always been, though. And I mean, they don't have Kofi Kingston in the Money in the Bank ladder match this year, and they don't have Adrian Neville to be in it.
But that's what I mean. Like, the six guys who are in it, you can be like, they all kind of have a case.
Yeah.
For winning.
A briefcase? Ha ha.
The Dudley Boys versus the Lucha Dragons in the kickoff show. I'm actually going to go with the Dudley Boys in this one.
Oh, gosh, I so don't care.
just pretend.
I got nothing. Like, I didn't even know this was happening before right now. So,
I mean, you literally just have to pick one of two teams. It's not, like, Sophie's choice here.
I do. I just don't really like either of them as teams. The Lucha Dragons, I guess, maybe?
There we go.
Does that look different?
That's the analysis that Sondra brings to the show.
I really don't like them that much as a team. I want Kalisto to, like, shed that Sin Cara-shaped albatross around his neck and then maybe do something interesting.
Speaking about tag teams, Fandango and Tyler Breeze.
Hey now.
We do not have enough time to break down what you're about to try and say. Fandango
and Tyler... If you're putting my beloved Fabrice in the same category as the Lucha Dragons, who, yes, I realize are former NXT Tag Team Champions, but seriously, Tyler Breeze and Fandango are amazing.
Mate, you used to jizz over the Lucha Dragons. Let's not
because they weren't the Ascension.
You can't give that as a barometer for the tag team. You can't be like, they're not. That's like saying, oh, I've got this really good pal. You'd really love to meet him. Is he a good nice guy? Well, he's not Hitler. Like, that's not...
I knew that's what you were going to say.
That's not a comparison.
It is when the Ascension had been tag team champions and had no opponents. Like, they had no tag team opponents since the Wyatts left. And then it was like, look, a tag team. And then, yeah, it just wasn't that great. I was really excited when Blake and Murphy beat them. Anyway, my point is that Tyler Breeze and Fandango are so great together, and they went tanning, and this whole Golden Truth Breezango thing is actually sort of one of the things I love. It's like in my NXT redemption, just in the middle of some random Raws and Smackdowns, right? Like, it's that little hint of just what the hell is going on, but I love it.
Here's my thing. I have no problem with three of the four people involved in this. I have a problem with Tyler Breeze being involved in it, because I really want him to do more. All the rest of them, I couldn't give a shit. They can sit and do tanning and golden truths and golden showers, whatever they want to do. But not Tyler Breeze. But anyway.
Well, I love Tyler Breeze more than most people love Tyler Breeze.
Well, you clearly don't love him enough, because you're content to see him in this mess.
I would rather see him in this mix having fun and doing fun things than doing nothing, which is what he was doing previously.
So Goldust and R-Truth, as the Golden Truth, are going to take on Fandango and Tyler Breeze. I'm not even going to say the name. In a match, I'm going to say that Goldust and R-Truth finally get their victory, which we've all been waiting for 6 months.
It will probably be a Golden Truth victory. Although, I think that what we didn't expect when the Golden Truth began their epic love story was that we would get Tyler Breeze and Fandango out of this whole situation and that they would be the best thing.
So, the pay-per-view will kick off with the... Well, not kick off, I'm just...
Well, at least they're doing something that somebody enjoys, right?
Exactly.
At least somebody is enjoying it.
If you'd enjoy...
And I sure am. If you're enjoying it too, tweet at KennyMC1985 to tell him how wrong he is and how he does not like to have fun and how this is great.
I love to have fun. I had fun at NXT Brooklyn when... Tyler Breeze for Thunder
Liger.
Oh,
you had to go there. You had to go there. I was at NXT TakeOver Brooklyn, Sandra. Sandra, who loves NXT more than anything.
I'm sorry, would you want me to do? Fly you over to the UK? Because I'm already doing that. Okay.
Okay. Mic drop. Fair point.
There we go. That was the only way to get past that really quickly. So
that's your card now. You're just like, what?
I've only got it for three more weeks. I need to play it as much as I can.
It's true.
Dolph Ziggler, Baron Corbin, and the feud that will never end.
Gosh, why isn't this over already?
It has to be Baron Corbin, I presume. I hope. I pray.
It better be. Have you? Oh, speaking of Dolph Ziggler, have you seen him on commentary ever?
No.
Don't. It's terrible.
Didn't his brother murder somebody?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, anyway, sorry.
But not Briley Pierce, not Ryan, the awesome brother.
Not the brother who has the bodybuilding book out.
Yeah. He's hilarious, actually.
There's the crap wrestler, the hilarious bodybuilder, and the murderer. That's the brotherhood of the Nemeths.
The Nemeth family. But no, Baron Corbin should just end of days him to his actual, like not shoot, murder him, but like maybe.
What a classless joke, Sandra, in the light of real murder.
Yeah, I didn't really think that one through.
Sheamus battles Apollo Crews. I actually am pretty digging this thing that they're
doing. Yeah, me too, weirdly. Yeah,
I like it. I think it's I like Sheamus. I like Apollo Crews being in something. I think Apollo will probably beat him. That's my pick.
I'm not so sure.
Oh, really? You think Sheamus is maybe going to grab the first one?
I think he might. Because I feel like Sheamus is super evil and mean, right? Sheamus has a lot more motivation going into this than Apollo Crews. This is actually a story that intrigues me, too. Because it was all about that, like, I didn't qualify for Money in the Bank ladder match, and I'm reacting to this loss badly kind of thing. And so maybe Sheamus will be super brutal, and maybe that'll give Apollo Crews an edge, and he'll have to react to a loss, and maybe that will make Apollo Crews more compelling.
It could happen. Okay, up next, you're going to want to talk about this more than I am. I'll be honest, the women's division is really, really not making me happy right now, but we do have a tag team match here with Charlotte and Dana Boobs against Becky Lynch and Natalia in a tag team match. I think that, I think Dana Boobs is going to show Charlotte that she is worth her salt by pinning one of the other women. That's my prediction. What do you think, Sandra? You are the lady of Inside the Ropes, so opinions on the ladies.
This whole thing infuriates me. I am so angry at this, okay? Like, we had a WrestleMania where we unveiled a new women's championship. We made the women's division on even keel with the men. We actually did, too, because they gave that WrestleMania match a lot of time, and they stole it, and I think they had the best match on WrestleMania, and things were so awesome. Like, I didn't like WrestleMania, and the women's division being a prominent thing saved WrestleMania for me. Like, there was some other good stuff on the card, admittedly, but the reason that WrestleMania star wasn't just like a dumpster fire in my mind and how I look back on it is because the women finally got their proper due and we were going forward and there was progress and it was so amazing and it meant so much to me as a woman and as a person who loves women's wrestling.
I remember listening to you talk about the review and how much you loved it outside of an Arby's in Arizona, just for clarity.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I did. I loved it so much. And now, months removed from that, we're not defending the women's championship on the show. Does it even matter that Charlotte's the women's champion? She's been pinned by Paige, what, twice recently? For reasons? We don't know why. Paige isn't involved in any of this because she's just, we've reduced the women to basically like non-players again, except for if they're in this tag team match. And I understand that Emma's injury kind of threw a wrench into things. It was supposed to be two women's feuds going on. We had two women's stories. It was unprecedented, it seems. And now they've not only made it back into only one women's story, which sometimes injury and whatnot, you have to play around with that. But they got how many minutes on Raw? Like a couple? And why is this tag match happening other than distraction roll-ups and crazy bitches? I don't know. I feel like we are devolving back into Divas division booking for the women, and it really upsets me, and I don't even care who wins. I don't want Charlotte to get pinned, but that probably, who knows, that'll probably happen to just set up the next lazy feud. Where is Sasha? I just...
So you're going with Becky and Natalia as the winners?
No, I don't want to do that either.
You need to pick a side, Sandra.
I know I need to pick a side. Let's have Dana pin Natalia, maybe.
Cool.
The heels, I guess. I'm just really upset.
I echo everything you say in seriousness. Rusev and Titus O'Neil for the US title. I don't want to be cocky about this because whenever I'm cocky, bad things happen. I hope and pray with every fibre of my being that they do not make a ridiculous decision and put the belt on a man because he's black. So, I hope that Rusev retains the United States Championship because Rusev is my favourite. Rusev is my bae. And just to quote him from Twitter earlier on, which I'm going to pull up here right now, Rusev tweeted out this afternoon ahead of his match this evening with the Father of the Year, which is what Titus O'Neil likes to call himself. He says, Titus O'Neill is going to go from Father of the Year to Most Disappointing Father of the Year. Happy Father's Day, no mercy. I love Rusev, I hope he wins.
Alexander Rusev will crush Titus O'Neill, as it should be, as it should always be, because he's just the best. He's so good.
Up next,
and why is this even happening anyway? Like,
he needs a feud. I'd rather he beats him than have to fight Kalisto again.
Oh, yeah.
We've got the tag team titles on the line, the Fatal 4-Way match with the New Day, the Club, Enzo and Cass, and the Vaudevillains. My prediction here is that the Club are going to raise the tag team championships, but I don't think they're going to pin the New Day. So I think that maybe like Enzo is going to get pinned in this one. But I am looking forward. I think it's time to take the belts off the New Day, to be honest. I think it's time to give them to somebody else, and I would like to see what the Club can do with it.
I think it might be time to take the belts off the New Day. However, commentary has been mentioning London and Kendrick's record for tag team title reign time lately.
Oh.
And whenever they start mentioning records, it seems like those records get broken. Like, remember when AJ started mentioning Maryse's record? And when Nikki Bella started mentioning AJ's record?
True, true.
So I feel like they might be going for a record reign with the New Day. And if someone's going to break the record, I think the New Day is a good one for it, because I think looking back and saying the longest reigning champions, the New Day, makes a lot of sense. So I guess I'm going to predict a New Day victory based on that. However, I could see myself being wrong, for sure.
Money in the Bank. That is the name of the pay-per-view. That is the name of the match. There's a briefcase. Chris Jericho has a scarf. The participants are Dean Ambrose, Kevin Owens, Sami Zayn, Chris Jericho, Cesaro, and Alberto Del Rio. I'm going to make you do the same thing I'm going to make myself do, which I don't like doing. We cannot give two or three names of who we think is going to win.
Okay.
We have to tie it to one person.
I hate doing this.
Now, what I'm getting... Right, okay.
This one could go so many ways, right?
Yeah.
And I think that's why I'm looking forward to it so much. Like,
I think my gut tells me Kevin Owens wins the briefcase, which I would be very happy with.
I would be very happy with that also. I think he would be great with the briefcase. I feel like...
Who do you think is going to win?
Just don't know.
Gut feeling.
Dean Ambrose seems too obvious, and also he's the worst. So that's what I really don't... I mean, okay. Like, here are the scenarios.
Oh, God.
That I have
you're just doing exactly what I could have done. You're just
I know.
Okay,
yeah. But I'm breaking the rules, man. So the scenarios that I could see, like, I guess ideally I almost would want Dean Ambrose to win, cash it in later in the night, and we're done with Money in the Bank for the year. Because I'm really tired of the briefcase. We've done everything with the briefcase, and it's just, it's a crutch, and it never seems to go well for whoever is holding the briefcase. But I don't know. I guess that also just seems too obvious. I don't know. Maybe Kevin Owens, maybe...
Kevin Owens, yeah. The one person I don't want to see win it is Sami Zayn. At all.
I don't want to see Sami Zayn win it either. I mean, I will, when I'm watching the match, I will absolutely want to see Sami Zayn win
it. Of course.
Because he will be in a match, and I cannot root against Sami Zayn. David McCutcheon and I were just talking about this yesterday, how we're like, when he's in a match, he needs to win the world and win everything.
Yeah.
But I think if Sami Zayn won the Money in the Bank briefcase, I think it would turn into the curse of the Money in the Bank briefcase for Sami Zayn.
Well,
and I don't think it would go well.
His character doesn't work as well under that story.
No.
Here is probably the most interesting match on the show. John Cena versus AJ Styles. A dream match for years. A match that I thought I would never get to see. Genuinely.
What? Realistically, did it ever occur to you as a match that you wanted to see but didn't think you could? Or they started telling you that this is a match you never thought you could see and now you can?
It's never a match that I thought I would see. It was never a match that I wanted to see. But as soon as I saw them together in the ring that first week, I knew I wanted to see it. So,
yeah, okay. Because that's where I am also.
Yeah, I think they kind of... So you know, it's like when Rock and Hogan fought at WrestleMania 18. I never knew I wanted The Rock versus Hulk Hogan. But then when they faced off, I went, I really want to see this. So it's all about the organicness of the moment, I guess, but how you... So here, I'm going to... Now, a lot of the bookies are in the UK are actually, like, the odds are for AJ to win. Like, if you... It's like 9-2 if you bet for John Cena to win.
Yeah.
So... I don't want to be obvious about it, and I really think that there is a danger that Cena might win, but I'm gonna hope that common sense prevails with WWE, with the writers, and with John Cena, and that AJ Styles is victorious and beats John Cena at Money in the Bank.
I'm going to predict AJ Styles, but here's the thing. We've seen John Cena have this issue with losing the first round and winning the next three. Mm-hmm. And so I think what I would like to see is for AJ Styles, and I think I said this before in the show, I would like to see AJ Styles win and then have them on separate brands.
Yeah, that's, yeah.
And not be able to fight again.
Yeah, I'm sure I ran that scenario as well a couple of weeks ago. Like, yeah, he gets bragging rights because you can't get the rematch for like a year.
Yeah.
Main event is World Heavyweight Championship, Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins. My prediction is Roman Reigns retains, but I have a feeling there's going to be something, like it's just not going to be straightforward.
I predict shenanigans for sure. And I wouldn't be surprised if those shenanigans involve... It depends. If Ambrose wins Money in the Bank, that could be the shenanigan. If he doesn't win Money in the Bank, he could still just forget where he is because he's the dumbest human and cause a distraction. I don't know.
So who's your prediction for the win? Reigns or Rollins?
Rollins might win by DQ or something.
But you don't think Rollins...
I don't think Rollins will come out with a title, no.
Okay. Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. That is our predictions for tonight's Money in the Bank. I'm rushing it through here because I want to get it online in time for you guys to have a good amount of time to listen to it. Thank you for sticking with us this week. Sorry that we didn't get an episode out sooner. Don't worry. We are going to have Monday, Thursday this week again. That will be back to normal. Thanks to Sondra for stepping in this week.
Of course, it's lovely.
You can get her on Twitter at SondraRuthRW. You can get me at KennyMC1985. You can tweet Robert Abuse about why he wants time off at Bertie_ITR. And you can get the main account at Inside_TheRopes. Enjoy Money in the Bank. I genuinely think this is a really good card with really good main events. And it should be a really fun show. So I hope you all enjoy it. And we will see you tomorrow. Oh, and then Thursday we've got the roundtable, which is exciting.
Yeah. So, post-pay-per-view roundtables are always a good time.
They are. So thanks for listening. We'll be back tomorrow. Sondra will be here with me talking NXT, where I will lose my shit talking about a segment.
It's so good, you guys.
We'll see you tomorrow.